Shmuel Beis, Perek Chaf, Pasuk Aleph opens up. V'sham nikra ish b'liyal, Shmai Sheva ben Bichri ish emini. He comes from Shevet Binyamin. We're going to see later on why this is significant. V'yizka b'shoifar, v'yirom e'en lanu chelek b'david, v'lein nachal alonu b'vin ishai. So he says, he takes a shoifar, he blows it, and he says, oh, why should we accept David as our king? What's the significance of, he says, Ein lanu chelek b'David, v'lei nachala ben Ishai, right? If you want to say that because, you know, David Melch comes from Shevet Yehuda, then we're not part of Shevet Yehuda. He comes from Shevet Binyamin, right? Why should we follow Shevet Yehuda? Just because they feel they're such big shots, we have to follow them all around? V'lei nachala ben Ishai. If you want to say that, oh, maybe he should be king, his father. His father was king, and therefore he inherited the kingship from his father. He was the heir apparent. That's not true either, because Ben Ishai is nobody. He wasn't anyone significant. He wasn't a king. Therefore, there's no reason for David Melech to be king now. But why should we follow him? Ish lo'el of Israel. Everyone go home. There's no reason for you to accept David as your king. Baruch atah Adonai Elohim Melech Yolam Shehakol Nehiyeh Bidvarei.
Amen.
V'yal kol ish Yisrael me'acharei David, acharei Sheva ben Bichri, v'ish Yehuda dovu b'malko min ha'yaradin v'ad Yerushalayim. So the rest of the Shvatim from Yisrael, they followed Sheva ben Bichri, but Shevet Yehuda stuck with David all the way till Yerushalayim. V'yavu David l'beis Yerushalayim. Now, it seems like a bit of a side point, what David is doing right now. We're going to explain why he had to do this at this point. V'yavu David l'beis Yerushalayim, he gets home to his palace in Yerushalayim. V'yikach ha-melech his esra noshim pilakshim, asher yiniach lishmar ha-bayis, v'yidnim beis mishmeres, v'chalkalim v'aleim lo'yvo. V'tiyen atzururis adm yoyim musan almono ischayis. Now David turns to deal with the 10 pilakshim that he left while he was running away from Avshalom, the 10 pilakshim that Avshalom was intimate with. Now he's dealing with them, and he is putting them aside. He supplies them with all their needs, but he does not resume his relationship with them. It seems to be a machlokes among the mafreshim. There, according to some opinions, David Melech was still mutar. He was allowed to be with these pilakshim. However, because he was with Batsheva Be'isser when he was not supposed to, right now he's going ahead and taking something that's bad to Mutertem, he's really Mutertem, but he's holding himself back because he's trying to overcome his Yetzer Hara. That's one opinion.
Did they go to Avshalom willingly, or were they raped?
So it seems like they were raped. They weren't. They didn't go to them willingly.
Right.
So that's according to that opinion. That makes sense. Because
no,
they were
supposed to force them, no?
Right, because it was done against their will.
Yeah.
Therefore, they were still allowed, halachically, to be married to David Melech.
I think, yeah.
But David Melech took an extra stringency, an extra chumrah, because, so to speak, to atone for his sin with Batsheva.
Like a kohen, you know, if the woman was raped, he couldn't.
Right.
He had the kohen gadol.
Right, exactly.
He had to separate from the.
Yeah.
All right.
But that the last pasuk says
right.
They were shut up until the day of their death in widowhood with their husband alive.
Right. Meaning what? Meaning their husband is still alive. Dabanach is still alive.
They're up the creek.
Right. They're.
I mean, but he's doing something because. But it comes out they're getting blamed too. I mean, they're suffering also.
Right, they're suffering too. You're saying
like a naguna. What are they suffering from?
Yeah, well, a naguna, I guess, is even worse because she's living in doubt. She has no idea if her husband is alive or not.
But the way the pasuk says, they were shut up until the day of their death. That means.
Meaning they didn't have any relationship with David HaMelech anymore. Right.
They couldn't marry anybody else either.
You couldn't marry anybody else because A simple man cannot use, cannot marry a woman that was married to the king.
It seems.
Why is this fact is mentioned to show?
So yeah, we're going to get to that. Why this is important right at this point?
It seems as David did this. He has a reason, but these women, why do they have to suffer that because of David?
You're right. You're making a good point. Yeah, you should not be machmir on the expense of other people.
Right. That's what I mean.
Right. So that's a good question. That's a good point. We see later on also when later in his life when David HaMelech was very old, it says that he couldn't stay warm and he had some kind of relationship with this woman, Avishai Geshunami. And she told him, why don't you marry me? He said, I'm not allowed to, right? I already have 18 wives. I'm not allowed to have any more wives, right? So the reason, also over there, they say that the reason why he did not want to marry her was because he wanted to overcome his Yetzer Hara. So it's got to be that it was done with some level of agreement with the women, and they, it wasn't just like he like tied them up, and stuffed them in a room somewhere.
Stop for a second. But it says she kept them warm. It was whatever that is. What does that mean?
But he was not intimate with her.
Huh?
He was not intimate with her.
No, you don't have to be intimate.
Right.
To get excited. If a woman comes over and gets your arm, you can get plenty excited without being intimate.
Right.
I mean,
you see, how did he overcome himself? How did he overcome his
Yetzer Hara? Why did he allow her to do that? To make him, you don't get into a situation that you may come to sin.
Right. He's asking why did he put himself in an exile?
Yeah.
It seems like he felt that he was in a place where he was gonna, again.
There was no TV. What else are you?
No. It's a very legitimate point.
That's
meaning,
not the idea.
Meaning, David HaMelech, it says before he was chayta with Bathsheba, David HaMelech was asked. He asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu for an nisayon, and Hashem gave him the nisayon with Bathsheba.
You told us that before.
Right.
He said,
So you're right.
Right, exactly.
So we see, you're right. You should not put yourself in a place of an nisayon.
Right.
Right. But in this case, meaning if he wanted to, he was allowed to really, technically, he was allowed to marry Avishai Geshunamis if he wanted to. Right? It wasn't like an Isser. But Sheva was married at the time. Mm-hmm. Right? Where Avishai was single. So if he really wanted to, he could have been with her. It wasn't an Avera necessarily to be with her. Yeah, he could have used her as a concubine. There was no Avera involved. He just wanted to fight his Yetzer Hara. That's the only reason why he kept that situation.
That's how you fight the Yetzer Hara. You bring it closer to him and say, stop. That was a mistake. Adam's wife, that was her mistake.
Right, right.
Way back then, she's figured, I'll do it, I'm not supposed to, and then I'll come it, and I'll be higher.
That's
wrong.
Okay, it seems like David HaMelech wanted to, he felt that where he was holding at that point, that was the right way for him to do. So now, in order to answer your question, Arkady, why this is mentioned right here, before we get to that, according to the other opinion, they were really forbidden to him. He was not allowed to marry them. And it means a kalachayimah, right? Just like a hedyot that used umak kli hedyot shenishtamash b'nei melech osur lehedyot, right? If something belonged to a simple person and a king used them, the simple person is not allowed to reuse them again. So something that belonged to the king and a hedyot went ahead and used them, a simple person went ahead and used them, so, kal v'chomer, even more so, the king is not allowed to use them again. So, according to that, we can explain why this is very necessary for David to do that right now. Because he wanted to show that Avshalom, even though the Jewish people accepted him as a king, Avshalom still had a din of a hedyot, as a simple person. And therefore, since he had a din of a simple person, David HaMelech was not allowed to be with these women anymore. And that's why he put them aside, to send a strong message to show everybody that Avshalom is still considered to be a hedyot. That's why he did this right at this point. And this will be sent as a message to the rest of the people to treat Sheva ben Bichri also as a hedyot. Just like Avshalom, who was the son of the king, is still considered to be a hedyot, a simple man, so too Sheva ben Bichri, who has no relation to the king, should also be taken as a simple man. So now, what does David do in order to deal with the situation? So Amalek turns to Amasa. Amasa used to be the general of Avshalom, and now he's hiring the general who was fighting against him up until this point. And he's using him and he's appointing him as his own general. What happened to Yoav, his loyal general? Because Yoav went ahead and killed Avshalom, he now decided at this point it didn't really work, as we're going to see, but he made an attempt to remove Yoav from his position as general and to appoint Amasa instead. So what does he do? He appoints Amasa. He sends Amasa to gather the tribe of Yehuda. At this point, he only trusted his own tribe. Everybody else followed Sheva ben Bichri. So he appoints Amasa. He tells him, "You've got 3 days to collect, to gather all the men. I want you to be back here in 3 days." 3 days later, he was not back yet. So what does David do? He sends Avishai. Avishai, who was his general until now. Avishai is the brother of Yoav. If we keep on waiting, Sheva ben Bichri is going to gain momentum. He's going to be even worse than the rebellion of Avshalom. Why don't you go ahead, run after Sheva ben Bichri, make sure he does not escape into a fortified city and regain strength, because once he gains the loyalty of the people, it's going to be very hard to fight him. So he sends Avishai to go ahead and chase Sheva ben Bichri.
What is he going to do? He can't say he's king. This person is going to rebel again. He's saying, "Go after him, because he's going to rebel against you." What promise to the people they should rebel against him?
Sheva ben Bichri wanted to be king. He wanted to appoint himself as king.
He wanted to be king, but how could he become king? I mean,
you're right. He has no yichus.
You get an army and you become king.
Yeah, yeah, but what he did, which was very smart, was he seized the moment. He found the time where the Jewish people were bitter, they were upset, there was this movement in the air of rebelling against David, and Sheva ben Bichri realized this is the perfect time. The time was ripe to start another rebellion against David.
At this point, did they know? Before you said that, not everybody knew that Shmuel made him, he was going to be the king. At this point, they must have known already he was king.
Right, but they figured, okay, he was king. His time is up, you know?
It's time for the next king.
Yeah. So now what happened was that when David sent Avishai, who again was his nephew, Yoav, who was the brother of Avishai, joined him. Now Yoav is very upset about the situation. He realizes that David is trying to remove him from being the general. So he's now going to go ahead and take revenge and take out his anger at on Amasa, who is now the new general. Oh wait, why did David HaMelech appoint Amasa? even though he was fighting against him, because he noticed that Amasa had the people, right? Many of the soldiers were still loyal to him, and he was hoping to regain the strength to have the loyalty of the people who used to be loyal to Avshalom not be loyal to him, and that's why he got Amasa to be his general. So the people of Yoav and the crazy and the Plesi who were the Sanhedrin, they go ahead and chase Sheva ben Bichri. They leave Yerushalayim, they begin the chase. So they were running after Sheva ben Bichri. They were not targeting Amasa at this point. However, they happened to meet on the way. Once they reached this big, this large rock, which was in Givain, they happened to meet Amasa. So Yoav decides that this is the moment to remove Amasa from being the general. Right? Amasa is clearly his competition. Mm-hmm. Now he was dressed with very unique uniform of the general. The general had a very unique uniform, so everyone, all the soldiers would recognize him as the general. And yet there were two types of swords. There was a sword that was very tight in its handle, and you could not take it out unless you literally pull it out, right? Because it was fitted. It was completely fitted to the size of the sword. There was another type of sword that where the handle was much bigger, was much larger than the size of the actual sword itself. And what Yoav did was he was extremely crafty. He took his sword and he put it in the handle that was larger than the sword. So that way, what he did was he bent over to hug Amasa, as if, right? And as he's bending over, the sword fell out, right? And when Amasa saw that, he just thought that Yoav was going to grab the sword from the ground and pick it up, put it back on the handle. But instead, what Yoav did is, as he picked it up, that's why Amasa wasn't going to be careful. He had no idea, had no reason to believe that Yoav was going to kill him. Why would he want to kill him? So he did not. He did not protect himself.
Cousins or
They were cousins. Yeah. So as Yoav was picking up the sword from the ground because it fell out, as we're going to see, let's see what happens. V'yomer Yoav l'Amasa, Shalom ato achi. He greets him as in a very friendly way. But toiches yad imin Yoav b'skan Amasa linchay klay. His right hand grabs his beard in order to hug him, right? And meanwhile, as he's bending down to hug him, his sword falls out. The Amasa linishmar b'cherav asher b'yad Yoav, and it falls out onto the ground. Meanwhile, Yoav picks it up, and Amasa did not protect himself. He did not dream that Yoav was going to hurt him. And he picks it up, he sticks it in the fifth rib, which, as we recall, was the same way he killed Avner. Mm-hmm. Avner, who was the general of Shaul. Yoav, as he was running away from Avner, he threw the sword and hit him in the fifth rib, which is where the kavod and the mara meet, where the liver meets. According to another opinion, it's where the heart is. Mm-hmm. And he stabs him once over there, and he kills him on the spot. So he kills Amasa, his competition, and he leaves him right there on the road. And they continue their search for Sheva ben Bichri. He appoints a man to steer the men, to have them keep on going. He's trying to get the people to keep on following Yoav, keep on going, follow Yoav. Yoav already left. Meanwhile, Amas is lying there in a pool of blood. When the man who was appointed to keep the people going recognized that everyone's stopping to look at Amas, it's causing a huge traffic jam. So what did he do? Ve'yosef et samasa min ha'mesil ha'sodeh, ve'yoshlich olav begid kashera kolaba olav ve'omad. So he takes the body of Amasa, pushes it over to the side, towards the field, he covers it, and that way he gets away of the distraction and he gets the rest of the people to keep on following Yoav.
Just like, what's her name? Nothing to see here in Benghazi. Is that what she said?
Yeah.
Nothing to see here.
Yeah.
Keep on going.
It says, who cares? What does it matter?
Yeah.
Right, as Amasa was pushed aside, everyone follows Yoav to chase Sheva ben Bichri. Ve'yavro b'chol shivtei Yisrael avela uve'ismacho b'chol aberim ve'kalu ve'yavoyu af acharav. So he now chases him throughout the whole all the shvatim of Israel, and he comes to two places, Avela and Beis Machal, which were right next to each other. Cholaberim are places called little towns around the town of Be'erais, which were in the Shevet of Binyamin. So since Sheva ben Bichri comes from the Shevet of Binyamin, he ran into the city called Avela, which was the Shevet of Binyamin. So that they finally find where he is. So now Yoav realizes that he found the man he's looking for, Sheva ben Bichri. So Yoav begins a siege around the city. He's got a huge army with him. He surrounds the city, and after he surrounds it, he builds a huge mount of sand. And all of his men start ripping apart the wall. They're trying to get through into the city and to take the city down, to destroy it completely. V'tikra isha chacham min ha'ir. A wise woman comes out of the city. What does she say? Shimu shimu imi na el Yoav, krav adhina v'adabar elecha. She calls over to Yoav and she tells him, why don't you come close? I want to talk to you. So let's see what she says. First of all, who is this Isha Chachama?
I can never think of. She's old already. She's
very old.
250 years old already.
Yeah. This woman is Serach Bas Osher. So at this point, she's got to be very old because we find that she was alive. She was the one who told
Yaakov
Oide Sifchai, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so she is considered from Ba'ei Eretz Mitzrayim. She came down to Mitzrayim. She was with Bnei Israel when they came down to Mitzrayim. She was with them when they left. She was the one who got the Aron of Yosef. Mm-hmm. And she's still alive today. Many, many years later, after they came to Eretz Israel, they already conquered it. And they've been living there for at least 250 years.
240 years. She's 250 years old.
Yeah, she's really, really old at this point.
More. All right, then now is the time of David.
Yeah.
They were in Mitzrayim for 210 years.
They were Yaakov before they went to Mitzrayim.
All right, that was only a short time, so. Maybe it was 210 years and 40 years in the desert. And this is time from the desert until. Yeah. Till Dovra Melech, I don't know.
300 something years, probably.
Yeah, probably 500 years old already. Yeah.
Yes, she is a very old woman.
There is no any single mention about the woman.
Sorry?
There is no mention of who is this woman.
Commentary?
Right, the Radak explains that this is Serach Bas Asher, yeah. Mm-hmm. The Radak points that out. So she seems to be the one to always save the day. Ve'ikra v'lev, v'toymar isha ha'ata yoyav. He comes closer to her and she says, are you Yoav? And he says, yes, this is me. What do you have to say? She has a whole long introduction. What does she actually say? Now, what does this pasuk mean?
Means he was doing the wrong thing.
Right, but what's she telling you? Mm-hmm. Well, what do these words actually mean? So the Malbim explains that she's telling him that it is fit for you to speak to the people of the city first. Before you come and start a battle against the city, it is the right thing for you to do is to speak to the people of the city and see what they have to say. Shali Shalaba Avil, why don't you ask the people of Avil, which was the name of the city, and only if that doesn't work, then you could go ahead and begin a war. And she's pointing him out, listen, I'm very old, right? I've been there when with Yaakov, I've been with Moshe Rabbeinu, right? And what they taught me was that before you start a war, you got to start with a dialogue. And that's always the way to begin. Anoichi Shlume Emune Yisrael. We are very righteous people. We're good people. There's no reason for you to kill us. This is a major city. Why would you kill out a whole city? Right? There's no point. Right? These are righteous people who are believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why would you kill us? He says, no, you're right. There's no point. I have nothing against the people in the city. I don't want to kill them necessarily. All I want is the guy called Sheva ben Michri who ran into hiding in your city. Once you hand him over to me, I'm gonna go my way, and you guys will walk away scot free. She tells him, I'll give you what you want. I'll make sure that the head of Sheva ben Michri will be thrown out to you over the wall. She comes over to the people of the city with wisdom, and she convinces them to kill Sheva ben Michri. Now, so she convinces the people of the city to kill Sheva ben Michri, and she throws his head over the wall, and the action is over. Everyone is happy. So now, what exactly did she tell the people of the city? So the Ma'arikra explains that what she did was, she went over to them and said, listen, Yoav wants 150 people dead. He wants 150 men. So they talk to amongst each other, and they say, okay, what should we do? Go back to him and ask him if he'll be happy with 100. Right? The same thing that Avraham Avinu did with Sdaim. Right? Why would you, there's at least, 50 tzaddikim and Sdaim, don't destroy the whole city. Mm-hmm. So they tell the woman, go and ask him if he's going to be willing to take 100. So she makes believe that she's going to ask him. And she comes back and she says, yeah, 100 is good enough. And they turn to her and say, okay, how about 50? Right? She goes back, 50. Yeah, 50 is good enough. 10, yeah, it's good enough. How about 1? She says, yeah, 1 is good enough. All he wants is Sheva ben Bichri. So she fooled them to believe that she had this whole dialogue with Yoav where he only wanted Sheva ben Michri to begin with. That was according to the Ma'arikra. The Malbim explains, according to the Radak, she actually gave them a whole shtickle Torah of here. She mamash gave them a sheer klali of what the halacha is in this point. So it's very interesting. The halacha is, in general, that if a group of bandits surround a small group of Jews, and they tell them, listen, let's say there's 10 Jews, and they say, either you give us one of you to kill, or we're going to go ahead and kill all of you. What is the halacha? What are they supposed to do?
You don't.
You don't.
Right.
You don't kill them.
Don't kill
them. Right, so the halacha is, you don't kill them. You don't kill them. Now, we spoke about this a little bit last week.
There's a difference. There's still between the two things with the baby and the thing. With the baby and the mother, that's a natural thing. Nobody's going to kill the mother if they don't kill her. Here, you're going to kill him, and you kill her. You're going to kill her. It's not a natural thing. with a baby and a mother. It's a natural thing. If you don't kill a baby, she's going to die by herself. You're not going to kill the baby. It's a natural thing. Here you're making a thing out that you're going out and kill the rest of the people. Now what's going to happen? He says, no, you can't kill this guy and so to save the rest of them. Right? You just saying that. Now he's going to kill them all. I mean, how do you put this together? You know, nobody's going to be left alive.
There was another case.
You know, the way you want to say this, he wasn't allowed to do that, so you're going to say, kill them all. That don't make any sense to me.
Go ahead.
Okay, let me ask you a different question. Why is this case different than the case of Shimshon?
Huh?
Shimshon, what happened by Shimshon?
Yeah.
When Shimshon was captured, they went ahead and he was surrounded by the Plishtim. And the Jewish people, the Plishtim wanted Shimshon in particular. Right? Now, over there, they had to get the agreement, they had to have Shimshon agree to go ahead and go to the Plishtim. Otherwise, they were not allowed, halachically, to give him over to the Plishtim. Mm-hmm. Right? However, over here, in the case of Sheva ben Bichri, the people of the city were allowed, apparently, to go ahead and kill Sheva ben Bichri in order to save the city. Why is this different than the case of Shimshon? In the case of Shimshon, they were not allowed to give him over. Whereas, in the case of Sheva ben Bichri over here, they were allowed to kill him in order to save the city.
But Shimshon, they say we're going to kill everybody?
Yeah. The Plishtim said we're going to kill everybody if you do not give us Shimshon. And they were not allowed to go ahead and kill him. Why not?
I saw it said that someone in Mepharshim said that he was going to say that all these people were with me. To save his own life, he was going to say, hey, they're all with me. You know, and the whole city would have been murdered by Yoav. He wouldn't have gone down by himself.
So you're saying they were all part of the rebellion?
Yeah, they were all. And he was the main rebel, and
they were all following him.
He was guilty against David HaMelech.
Right.
So you got to tell me
he was guilty.
No, this not this, but with the Shimshon business.
Yeah.
So it comes down to kill Shimshon and let the others leave, or kill them all.
Right. And they chose now to give Shimshon over. They gave Shimshon over to the Plishtim.
But you're not saving.
But they were
other
not
one.
Allowed to. What?
You're not saving the other ones.
In the case of Shimshon, yeah.
Huh?
The Plishtim told the Jewish people, "You give us Shimshon,
yeah,
we're going to leave you alone.
If you don't give me Shimshon, they're going to kill him anyway."
Right. So why were they not allowed to give them Shimshon? The question is halachically, if you have a group of people in danger, right, of being killed, they're in mortal danger, right? Mm-hmm. So why in this case of Sheva ben Bichri they were allowed to save themselves by giving over one person, whereas in the case of Shimshon they were not allowed to go ahead and give over Shimshon in order to save the rest of the Jews? What's the difference?
They were allowed to do it? I mean, this was...
Yeah.
They were tricked into believing...
No, they were allowed to do it, yeah. According to the Radak, when it says, V'tava Yishal Kol Am B'chachmasa, she came to the people of the city with wisdom, she actually gave them a whole Shir Koli, a whole Shtekel Torah, of why they're allowed to go ahead and kill Sheva ben Bichri. So the difference is that...
She gave them the Shir, but she was being deceptive in terms of the dialogue that she...
Well, that was a different shot. That was according to the Ma'ariv Kral.
Okay.
We're not talking according to the Radak.
Okay. To make a difference, who asks, Jewish or not?
It doesn't make any difference.
This one case is... This was not Jews, it is Jews.
No, it doesn't make a difference.
Right.
No. Doesn't... The fact that over there there were Plishtim doesn't make any difference. Mm-hmm. So the difference between the two cases is that in the case of Shimshon, Shimshon was in a position, if he wanted to run away. Meaning, he could have ran away. The whole story over there. But what happened was, he was hiding inside a rock, and if he had a way out. He had an escape. So because he had a way out, they were not allowed to go ahead and give him over in order to save the rest of the people. However, in the case of Sheva ben Michri, if Yoav would have captured the city, Sheva ben Michri would have died anyhow. So he's a dead man no matter what. Mm. Either Yoav captured the city, or the people of the city killed him. That's what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. So that's the difference. Because he was going to die at any point.
Oh, this way Shimshon wasn't... If they didn't give him over,
he was able to escape.
The rest of them will die, but Shimshon
right.
will...
Exactly. Okay.
Well, now I can understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So now, just one more point, a little bit of food for thought. If we analyze the halacha, right? The halacha is that if a group of bandits surrounds a group of Jewish people and says, either you give us one of you, and we are going to, if not, we're going to kill all of you. The halacha is, you're not allowed to kill anybody. Right? You're not allowed to give anybody over. Mm-hmm. Everyone must die. And the Rambam paskens like this. The question is, the Kesef Mishnah asks on the Rambam, if you think about it, it doesn't make any sense. Right? Let's look at the Isser of murder. Right? The Gemara talks about why if someone is faced with the following option. God forbid no one should be there, but if someone puts a gun to your head and says, either you kill that man, or you're going to be killed. What's that law? Are you allowed to kill?
No,
you're not allowed to. Why not? The Gemara says, what's the reason? Because my chassis, who said that your blood is redder than the blood of the other man, right?
Yeah.
So who are you to decide that your life is more important than the life of this other person?
Right, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So now, that's talking about a situation where if you do not kill him, his life is going to be saved. Right? So now, the Kesef Mishnah asks a question on this halacha. When you go ahead and choose not to give anybody over, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you choose not to give anybody over, then this svar of my chazis, meaning who are you to decide which one is going to live and which one is, and that your life is more important than the other, it doesn't apply over here. Because in this case, you're not saving the life of the other Jew.
He would die.
Right? He's going to die anyway. Right? So, the whole isser of not killing anybody over, because who are you to decide, doesn't apply in this case, because he's going to die no matter what. So, according to that svara, you should go ahead and give somebody over. Because the whole reasoning behind not murdering mm-hmm. would not apply. That's what the Kesef Mishnah asks. And he answers. That makes sense in a case of where they did not single anybody out. Meaning, if they did not single anybody out, right, in that case, you have, meaning there's no way to choose who is going to be sent out. Right? If they single someone out and said, okay, we want him, that's a different case. But if they didn't single anybody out, they said, yeah, just give us one of you. I don't care who it is. Right? It could be anybody. In that case, you can't go ahead and say and choose, okay, you know, you're going to be the one to be sent out, because then you could apply the svar of who are you to decide that life is worse than yours. It's more important than yours.
Let them choose their own.
Well, the thing is, they can't. They don't have that ability.
Them. They're talking about the enemy. They're talking about Jewish people.
No, the enemy says, listen, if you do not choose, we're going to kill all of you. If you do not just give us somebody, if you don't send somebody out, we're going to kill all of you. We're going to drop a bomb and kill everybody.
Drop a bomb, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. You know, something like that.
So. Yeah. So they don't have the power.
This is a classic Holocaust story.
Right. Yeah, it applied.
So who's to say who should be the one?
Exactly. That's why.
That's why.
That's
the bottom line. Who's going to say which one?
That's the right one.
If he said this one, Paskin, then it's a whole. Then it's a different story altogether.
Right. Yeah. What?
That's why they're burning Paskin. They should all be killed.
Right. Right. That's halacha.
Because the Nazi said someone should step forward.
Things over there, and if they say someone should step forward, that could be a bit different, because the question is, what if, meaning the halacha is that they're not allowed to choose to go ahead and say, okay, let's decide among ourselves who's going to be the one to go ahead.
Eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
But let's say someone volunteers, right? Say, you know what? I have nothing to lose anyway, you know, whatever. And he says, you know, I'm going to be the one to go ahead and step forward and save everybody's life. Is he allowed to do that?
It wouldn't be in such a case. Couldn't
it's like committing suicide if you're going to say that.
You have a girl. You know, a girl like the, Hashem used to point out which one didn't like. Had this. If you did that, would that be allowed?
No, that would not be allowed
I'm not shooing again. I shall be suing again.
No. It's still considered to be that they decided among themselves. Mm-hmm. But it's another question. If someone decided to volunteer, if he's allowed to do that, that's the question.
I would say no.
Why not?
It's like
he's gonna die anyway. He knows he's gonna die anyway. Mm-hmm. He's gonna die no matter what. If he does not step forward, he's going to die. If he does step forward, he's going to die. What difference does it make? Yeah. The only difference that does he make it that he's going to save everybody else.
He dies and everybody else gets saved. And if he doesn't step forward, they all die. Yeah.
So this question is dealt with.
I don't think you ever know, anyone would know unless they're in that situation. That's all.
Yeah, this issue is dealt with by the Minchas Chinuch and someone Mitzvah Reish Tzadihei. He talks about this, and he actually asks a question on the case of Mishnah. We're gonna end with this because we have to finish up. He says that the case of Mishnah ended off by saying that in a case where they did not single anybody out, no, they're not allowed to decide among themselves who's going to die, right? Because that's over there. You have the svar of Maichazis. Because who are you to decide that that person should be killed, right? But he says that it should be a situation of what we call kol de'alam gvar. Meaning, if you have, four guys decided to gang up on one person, right, then they should be allowed to do so. Because, because no one was singled out, then you could say, okay, that person was going to die anyway. He's going to die regardless.
What do you mean, the gang up? It means four people fight, and the loser is given over?
Yeah.
It's still choosing.
Well, there...
You chose the loser. You're still choosing it. What's the difference? If he didn't fight, you do choose him, or if he fought with a set of guys and he lost? You're still choosing the loser. Who's choosing him? Himself.
It's like the gladiator.
Unless he says, I don't know, if I'll fight you guys, whoever loses has to go.
Right. Well, he seems to understand that because you have a situation of kol de'alam gvar, right, meaning, which basically means the strongest one wins.
I think kol de'alam, the kol de'olam gvar reminds me of the Tosfos in Bava Metzia, the first one, where he says...
What about the Sfina?
He says, the Gemara says that the same wasn't the tallest, the whole moment,
right.
Yachleiku. He has a kind, what do you mean Yachleiku? How come in this case we don't say Yachleiku? We say, whoever, kol de'olam gvar, whoever, if you're going around, you see something, whoever, who grabs it first, It says in another case you have to swear. There's different ones. He brings out three different cases. I think stuck in my mind.
Right.
60 years.
Right. Yeah. So that's svar is used. The Menachas Chinuch wants to use it over here and say that kol el gvar because of kol el gvar, meaning because the person who's going to die anyway, meaning the person who loses is going to die, that anyone who wants to save themselves can go ahead and save themselves. Mm-hmm. You're looking at the person who can save himself and say, you know, like I'm just trying to save myself, right? Mm-hmm. The other person who's going to end up going out is going to die anyway. And you focus on the survivors rather on the person who was chosen. It's a whole long piece. The Menachas Chinuch deals with it over there. But it applies to many, many cases. It applies to... we're not going to go too much into it because we have to finish. But maybe we'll continue it a little bit more next week. In any case, the Isha Chachama decides to convince the people of the city that they're in fact allowed halachically to give Sheva ben Bichri away. And once Yoav was handed over with the head of Sheva ben Bichri, he's happy and everybody goes home.
Who actually took his head off?
It's not clear, but the people... I don't think it was her, no. It sounds like she convinced the people of the city.
I thought I saw something. I'm not sure. I have to look again. I thought it said they handed him over and... Maybe it was Yoav that...
No, she said she's going to send his head over so they'll know he's dead.
It was a saying, but I'm not positive.
Yeah. Okay, let's just finish up. The Yoav El Kotz El Kotz of Israel Uvnaya Ben Yehuda La Crazy Vela Placey V'Adorim Al Amas V'Yeshav Ad Ben Chilu Damaskir Now we're going through all the appointees of David and Melech. At this point he realizes that he cannot get rid of Yoav so easily because Yoav killed his appointee general. So he appoints Yoav on, he's going to be the general again. And Benaya Ben Yehoida Ben Yehoda is in charge of the Sanhedrin. And Adoram Alamas, this is new. This is a new position. Until this point, David Melech did not collect taxes from the Jewish people, from all the Shvatim.
Nice guy.
Right? However, now that they rebelled against him, he decided to go and collect taxes to put them in place.
How did he get along without taxes? Where did he get the money?
Well, it says that when he would go out to war, he would use the spoils of war to fund his kingship. Okay, and then Yeri was the kohen for David HaMelech. Okay, we'll stop here and we'll continue next week.
Okay.
Mirtzah.